Hey, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
I really got out a lot out of today, and I think of this as marketing and promotion. I'm actually walking away with development and growth.
Yeah, I thought this whole experience, the mentoring conversation before we started recording and this conversation after, was extremely helpful.
Hey, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Guess what? We're mentoring today, and a lot of the mentoring goes on before we get on the air. Yes, I like to prepare every single guest so that they feel confident and comfortable and a little bit scared with the challenges of a deep, meaningful conversation. But hey, I'm working for you. I want to give you good stuff. So today in the studio, we have a second conversation with Dr. Israel Shokeye. He's a board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist who is committed to treating mental health challenges through a holistic approach. One of Dr. Shokeye's main areas of focus is in working with individuals carrying a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder in their families. He's invested in helping those he works with lead healthy, productive, and fulfilling lives. He co-founded Plymouth Psych Group in 2011 to enrich lives by providing compassionate care through a collaborative and holistic approach. Dr. Shokeye attended medical school at the Premier College of Medicine, University of Ibadan, Nigeria, and completed his general adult psychiatry training at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. He went to specialize in child and adolescent psychiatry at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Shokeye has a wealth of experience working in a variety of clinical settings, including governmental county clinics, schools, inpatient units, partial hospitalization programs, and intensive outpatient programs and outpatient clinic settings. He's an adjunct clinical faculty of psychiatry at the University of Minnesota Medical School and involved in research and new program development. Hey, welcome again to our conversation.
I am excited and anxious to be here.
Oh, wow. Very good. So what other feelings are you experiencing?
Honestly, I'm exhausted.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's Monday. Yeah. So Mondays are busy and
require a lot of focusing.
Mm-hmm. And I also have a lot of meetings on Mondays, which can be draining.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, hopefully this conversation will boost your energy up a bit.
Yes.
All right. Well, we learned in our last conversation a little bit more about your background and that you grew up in Nigeria. You got your medical degree there and you ventured your way to Minnesota. Now, I was reading in your bio that you were in New York at Mount Sinai School of Medicine for a while. So how did that happen in your background?
So I actually went from Minnesota to New York. And I did my residency in New York. I moved with my family to New York. And
okay.
After
your
3 years
and your two
with
kids.
My wife and children.
How old were they?
Well, my son was actually born in New York.
Oh,
so
okay.
Was born in the Bronx.
So, I bet he loves saying that.
Yes, he does. That's different than his friends. So he was born in the Bronx and we lived in New York for 3 years. And I think it was a great experience. I moved back to Minnesota after my residency in New York because my wife is from Minnesota and we had more family and support in Minnesota. It's sometimes a little more difficult when you have a kid and you're raising the kid in New York. So,
especially if you're both working.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is she up to?
Currently, she's helping out with our finances at Plymouth Psych Group.
Oh, excellent. So she's the bookkeeper?
Yes. Sometimes.
With parentheses around it?
Yes. She multitasks, does some bookkeeping, and also works with the payroll and like account payables.
Okay.
So
yeah, well, it's good to have somebody that you trust doing the books. And so, it's a role that she can really grow to learn and love.
Yes.
Especially if she loves numbers.
Yeah, she's good with numbers. And she doesn't mind doing the punching and Excel and all that, which it's not my strength.
Right. So you need somebody who loves that kind of stuff. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Well, we learned in our last conversation that you grew up, you're the oldest of six.
Yes.
And then you had some other cousins and uncles in the household too, so lots of activity. Your mom was very supportive, generous to a fault. You grew up in a Christian household.
Correct.
And she seems to be moving more in the spiritual dimension, is what you mentioned.
Yes. My mom is actually a pastor.
Oh, she is.
She's retired.
Okay.
I'm not sure how you retire from being pastoral, but...
Right, because your community, when your community calls...
Yes.
Well, that's great. So what religion would that be?
It's Christian. So...
Like a Baptist?
So it's non-denominational.
Non-denominational. Okay, yeah. That's what you meant. Okay. Mm-hmm. So very trusting and generous person. Your dad is a provider, hardworking. He had some... he's an ex-soldier... So he had some kind of militant structural ways in which to put the reins on the family.
Yes, he did.
And keep them in line. He was a civil engineer by trade, and then he owned his own business.
Yes.
Which is where you learned your work ethic and also how to be resourceful and entrepreneurial.
I'll say so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talked about the difference between a psychiatrist and becoming a therapist. So we know that psychiatrists, in order to prescribe medication, you have to go through some understanding of how the body works and how the mind works and how it processes and the drugs that you're giving them. So you need to get a medical degree.
So you do get a medical degree, yes.
Okay. And in working with those who are carrying a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, I know in the DSM-4 manual or whatever of diagnostics.
DSM-5 now.
No, it's the 5.
Yes.
Okay. They always change slightly some of the terms.
Yes.
Not the terms per se, but how they're defined.
So the DSM-4 had 3 criteria for the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, which was primarily a deficit in speech and a deficit in social skills and social cognition and repetitive movements and behaviors or restricted interest. Now, the DSM-5 removes the deficit in speech and combines and left the deficit in social skills and some speech combined together. And also the second criteria is having repetitive movements and restricted interests. And this ranges depending on the severity. And it also stratifies it into types of whether the diagnosis is with intellectual disability or with speech impairment. Now, 1/3 of individuals with autism have intellectual disability. And so the level of need is different. So mild, that there are individuals with mild autism that sometimes you would not know. There's a mild, moderate, and severe to the... And the severity goes to the level of whether there's whether they're nonverbal and they're needing more support.
Mm-hmm. And you have a 7 to 10 week outpatient.
So our outpatient program is directed towards individuals with higher functioning. So they're usually mild because they need to have the ability to learn the skills that are being taught to them. There's a lot of, you know, we don't use the term high functioning, but there's a lot of individuals with mild autism spectrum that have normal speech, high intellectual cognition, or just sometimes just normal intellectual ability, but struggle with still the same social skills and also regulating their emotion. And you can see how if you struggle with ability to relate to people, it can affect your mood. As individuals, like if you go into a situation whereby you cannot interact appropriately, or you struggle with understanding that interaction with peers, then that can also lead to some dysregulation in your emotions. So our program...
And people misunderstanding.
Yes. So there's a huge factor of misunderstanding those individuals, because some people think they're rude, they're being defiant, they're being oppositional.
And this is what makes them vulnerable to be picked on or bullied or...
Yes. So there's a high propensity for them to be bullied.
Yeah.
Because of those deficits that they have.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you started this practice in 2011 with a partner who she moved with her family to another state. And so you took over the partnership. What did you start out with? What was your focus?
So
then how did you change it? And what?
So we started providing medication management and therapy. And we also expanded to doing psychological testing. And after, I was saying, the last 3 years, we have began putting a lot of effort into our intensive outpatient program, which is specialized for the teenagers on the autism spectrum. And I spoke briefly about the challenges that the individuals have that had led to us starting that program to help them, because the regular, typical, which we call neurotypical programs, do not specifically address their challenges.
Mm. Yeah. So you can provide them support. Now, do people, once they go through, like the families who go through the outpatient training, the adolescents, and then you also work with the parents so that they can notice what skills you're teaching them and build on them in the family.
Yes. And practice the skills.
And practice them. Do they come back to you then over kind of a lifetime, or how does that work?
Well, so sometimes they do. Because if medication management is involved, and they're also seeing a therapist in our clinic, which if they do not have their own therapist, or they don't have their own med prescriber, then we provide that service to the family. And then over time, we continue to work with the family and determine what else they can benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on what services they already have before coming. Because if they don't have, then we will help provide those services. And if they do have, we work with them to go and continue with their providers, because sometimes they already have a connection with those that they were working with.
Yeah. And how did you decide to focus on autism?
So I had spoken about some of that, seeing the need.
Yeah.
That was
in our first conversation.
In the community, first conversation. And like I said, to me, I believe that that they are underprivileged, because regardless of, their social stratus, regardless of the their education. Because if you're aware of studies that talks about emotional regulation that talks about emotional EQ, right?
Yeah.
Emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. right? The studies that came out from Harvard by Daniel Goleman.
Goleman,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And they took a bunch of Harvard graduates and they followed them over time based on the intelligence, their intellectual quotient, their IQ, and those that have a higher EQ, called it emotional intelligence. They found out that those with the emotional intelligence actually did better with those with just the high IQ. Mm-hmm. And emotional intelligence has, I believe, they're about four different parts of that. And a huge part of it is, self-regulation, self-awareness, and interacting with other people. Mm-hmm. That's just me paraphrasing it.
Yeah.
But you can see how that can affect somebody if you lack those skills.
Yeah.
It is, no man is an island. So,
right.
If you do not have the skill to interact with other people, it gives you a huge disadvantage.
Yeah. And one of the things you're talking about too, that is a challenge in your business, which relates to this, mm-hmm. is kind of building a culture. And part of that is, like, I have found and been working with business owners on developing their own emotional intelligence vocabulary, that they need to be able to talk about what, they're experiencing mm-hmm. so that they can be more aware of what other people are experiencing mm-hmm. that they're working with. But it is really a big challenge because people are like, well, if I start talking about emotions, the whole conversation is going to be about how a person feels. But I just think that our whole society could use a lot more focus on emotional, especially we need a lot more skills and tools in this.
Yes, I agree. And yeah. I think that's part of the biggest challenge I have as a business owner is also managing people.
Yeah.
Right? Because everybody's different and realizing that when you're interacting with people, sometimes you need to change your style to connect with somebody because it depends on the person. And so having that self-awareness to do that is a learning process for me. And honestly, I've had to read the emotional intelligence book
right.
two times now.
Yeah.
And I still right. feel like I still need to keep learning.
Right.
To improve my emotional intelligence and being more self-aware. And, that's an ongoing process that I feel like
I don't know
whether I ever get to.
Yeah, well, it's the first skill set in self-leadership is mm-hmm. self-awareness. And then building upon that. But I think you're right. You never reach kind of the ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what makes it exciting.
Yes.
And different people add a different dimension to the work and figuring out, how long do I keep somebody employed?
Mm-hmm.
If they're starting to cause the company more and more headaches and problems and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. in that realm, what has been your biggest HR challenge?
Well, so that's a good question, because I feel like I have more than one big hiring challenge. Hiring is, one of my biggest challenge is finding the right people, finding people that are passionate about what we do.
Yeah.
And then trying to move along people that are not. That can be difficult.
Yeah. And figuring out too, what's your bottom or, where's the line?
Yes.
How much will I be working with this person and how much do they need to come up in order to meet the challenges that are in the work environment? Yeah, because you want to give people a chance.
Yes.
But at the same time, also, you want to, I've worked with clients who I had to go in and fire the person. They just couldn't do it.
Okay.
Because they were just, you know, you see them as part of the family. And, mm-hmm. and so, you know, you're emotional connected with them. Or having family in your business too. I mean, you have to create the climate where you can talk more deeply about things.
Yes, but that's, I agree.
Yeah, like having regular meetings to talk about their work, but also talk about how are things going. And people being willing to make the changes that are needed for the relationships to work more smoothly. Because that's, you know, that's a whole different commitment level.
And people also take in the feedback that you give them. I think yeah. that sometimes people have any self-awareness to take the feedback.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's not always good feedback. And we learn from the negative feedback more. Mm-hmm. But those are also the hardest to give.
But if it's in the framework of constructive criticism.
Yes.
Yeah. That you're trying to say, you know, some things aren't working. We're not, none of us are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to clash.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to set up the parameters for people to know that, you know, at some point we're going to have a conflict. But I think that the old way of doing business, which is to not talk about your emotions and you leave the emotions, you check them at the door, are not working. It never has worked. People are real human beings and they're going through a lot. And I mean, that's why I developed this whole spectrum about well-being where people can fill them out. Because if you're not meeting your needs on a regular basis, you're going to have more severe, significantly negative feelings all the time. Well, that affects how you work.
Yes. And eventually affects your productivity and the results that you get.
Yeah.
So they're all tied together. Mm-hmm. So I do agree with that.
Yeah. So it is an ongoing challenge and to figure out too what will work best for everybody and also what works with the bottom line for the business. And I think educating the staff too about what it costs for people in to behave this way, what it costs the business in time and resources. I think that that's really helpful to be so honest because in a small business, the cash flow fluctuates.
Yes, it does.
And it affects the person running the business and their mood, right? And it also affects everybody around them. And so to be able to talk about, you know, cash flow stuff, or we're struggling with this or not, but I think there needs to be different conversations about that and what's appropriate and who's involved in some of those conversations because it isn't the whole staff of 17, but it's, you know, how do you develop the culture and then how do you work toward developing your vision, having people buy into your vision, but also how do you take a look at them and say, now, I know you've got some individual visions that you're playing out here and you've got your life work that you're doing here. And how is that fitting in with what we're doing? And
yes.
So there's kind of two different parallel tracks going on.
How do you merge to some extent both tracks?
It's tricky. I don't think there's any like silver bullet answer that works for everybody. But I think that it's a finessing on your part or any business owner's part. But they have to be willing to kind of bump up their self-awareness and grow along with their team. Because where you start with your business and how you grow your staff is not where you end up.
Yes.
Because you're changing. So your perspective of, I'm sure since you've been through the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, so they had a 7-month program where
Correct.
You wrote a growth plan.
Yes.
It's an excellent program.
Yes, the MITA mini MBA.
Yeah, the mini MBA with through MITA. So what was the biggest impact that that program had on you? And I'm sure it changed your perspective a bit.
Yes. So the program, I would say, had an impact in each section because the program is divided into about 5 sections. The first section is the strategic goal setting piece. The second is talks about finances. And the third is marketing. And fourth is HR and hiring. And the last piece, I think, is a combination of contracting governmental contracts and also seeking funds through investors. I think that every section of that program taught me something. I believe I was able to take away, you know, for example, strategic goal planning. You know, one of the things that I realized was that the goals I'm setting, has that been communicated to everybody? Are we all running in the same direction? You know, for the finances is, you know, sometimes I remember, because I've always been fortunate to have good accountants and, you know, they do the profit and loss. And but understanding the profit and loss and using it to run your business is crucial. And also understanding that there are three financial statements, right? There's the cash flow, there's the profit and loss, and there's the balance sheet, right? In the past, I used to look at my profits and loss and look at the last line. If it's negative, I go get a drink. If it's positive, I go get a drink. Either way, I get a drink. So, but I wasn't using it to run my business. It was just...
Am I making money or not?
Yes, am I making money or not? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that breaking it down helped me understand, like, how do I use this to run the business? And, you know, sometimes, I mean, there's also the marketing piece, right? So now I understand, I focus on the segment. So I have, like, my marketing plan is divided into segments. You know, there's different segments that we market. So, and, you know, our HR is, like I said, is always work in progress. How do you find the good people? How do you compensate them and retain them, right? Because you have some good people and you're competing with the big components on those people that may be able to give them a little more that you can pay. So how are you
structuring
something that gives them a buy-in into what you're doing? Because for some people, yes, the money is important, but it's not all about the money. There's some fulfillment in what you do. There's some, you know, being passionate about what you do. Because, you know, the research shows that 80% of Americans are going to a job they don't like, but they're not quitting, right?
Yeah.
So how do you work with them, or how do you let all of you work in the same and run in the same direction?
Yeah.
So I think that those are huge takeaways from me. And, you know, the ultimate goal is also executing those takeaways, right? You're just not going to sit on them and not do anything. So the hard pieces keep going, right?
Yeah.
So it's still rise and grind. It's not over yet.
That's
so
right.
It's over.
There is another. Exactly. So. Yeah, we could have a little movie line, bunch of movie lines here. Well, very good. Well, thank you for sharing so much. Is there anything else you would like to share regarding your practice?
Well, I think Plummet Side Group is a growing practice. And I believe that we do a lot of great work. I believe we get a lot of good feedback from our patients, our clients, and we are excited about where we are going regarding our specialty program, which is the outpatient program for kids on the spectrum. And in the next, you know, year or so, we're planning to increase our focus and also be able to provide more of those services to, you know, to more families. So we're working with, like, other clinics, the schools, and the families to be able to achieve that goal.
Well, I really like your holistic approach. And also, it just sounds like you're teaching skills that are really critical to kids having the skills in order to function well in the world and also manage tricky relationships that they, you know, don't know how to read.
Yes. Ultimately, to fulfill, you know, the goals that they were put here to achieve. So I feel like that's the big picture.
Yeah.
Their own God-given goals.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're in your passion and you're doing the life work that you were meant to be doing here.
I believe so.
Beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Nancy, for coming.
Thank you for having
this conversation.
Yes, you're welcome. Is there any last advice that you would have for parents?
Well, I always tell the parents that come to our program that, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And sometimes you have to keep going and they should not give up regardless of the challenges they're facing. There's a lot of, we live in environments where kids get a lot of things thrown at them and sometimes they can't even manage them, but not to give up, to seek help. When there's a change, when there's a transition, those are times that kids will struggle. Those are times adults will struggle, you can seek help. There's help out there. Don't give up. Suicide is not an option. I think that is sometimes the depression telling you that you can't see other things. So that's why we believe in, developing hope, inspiring a change in people, and then create a difference in their lives. So never give in, never give up.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your life with us.
You're welcome.
And your practice. Yeah.
It was wonderful to talk to you, Nancy.
Thanks. Mike Bea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, my brother from another mother. We'll see everybody next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. Totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to evolve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our WeMentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through WeMentor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a WeMentor mini lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in WeMentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out WeMentor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at WeMentor.com or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening and we'll see you next week.